The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League, City are top and they're going to stay there. The bottom three is confirmed. Let's all come back in August. Also, West Ham are flying, 7 points from nine. Harry Kane is back, scoring goals and running around. And what a strike by Daniel Sturridge. Elsewhere in the Football League, Lee Catamole keeps on scoring. And in Europe, Barcelona are rubbish, the Madrid derby was rubbish, and Bayern Munich are rubbish. Lars is very excited about Jovinho. More of that in a bit. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. 1 point for me for not mentioning Jose Mourinho. We have a panel today, fortunately. Barry Glendenning, nice to see you.
Hello, Max.
Tell everybody what you had for breakfast. We normally, apart from Lars's breakfast, we do them to check our microphone levels are okay, and your breakfast was utterly disgusting.
It was a strawberry yop yogurt drink with two raw eggs mixed into it.
Does it not like curdle in your stomach?
No, it's fine.
Okay. Hey, Mark Langdon from the Racing Post.
Hi, Max.
Nice to see you.
I'm just still a bit disturbed by Barry's breakfast,
it's
to be honest.
Coagulating disaster. You're looking quite sort of swish today, Mark. Sort of the most James Bond-esque. So you've got a roll neck and your hair slicked back.
I'm dressed for autumn now. Yeah, the summer's gone. This is my favourite time of the year.
Okay, so you go casual for summer.
Oh, for sure.
And then this is the all new, all smart Mark Langdon. Lars, Andy says, I've started to think that Lars Siverton sounds like Michael McIntyre, and now I can't get it out of my head every time he speaks. Do you have this issue? I didn't, but I'm wondering if I will by the end of the pod. A sort of Norwegian-Irish McIntyre. Is that the dream for you?
No.
What do you have for breakfast?
I'm battling a bit of a cold today, so I just had a lem zip and left the house. So actually, Barry is, you know, winning the disgusting breakfast day.
Also, the most normal breakfast you've ever had. Should we start then with West Ham 3, Manchester United 1? I am going to try and do some West Ham to start with, if that's okay with everyone. I certainly, before Everton away, I think probably everyone else said Everton, looking at their fixtures, they'll probably have no points in November. And since then, 7 points from three games, including Chelsea and Manchester United. Mark, how impressed? You were there.
I was there,
how
yeah.
How impressive were West Ham?
They were. From their point of view, it was an excellent performance, an excellent result. There were some big performances. Diop at the back was very aggressive against Lukaku. Zabaleta was rolling back the years, getting up and down the right flank. Noble had as good a game as what I've seen him, you know, for a number of years. Actually, he was definitely the most influential midfielder, you know, from either team. Arnautovic scored his goal and looked dangerous. Felipe Anderson and Yarmolenko on the wings seem to have found their roles within the team. So, I mean, it was an impressive performance from West Ham. Little asterisk next to it that about Manchester United.
Are you going to the first one to break?
No, no, no.
There you are.
I'll pass that on to somebody else.
KPS says, so far this season, Barry has described West Ham as toxic, a shambles, and a clown car of a team. Would he now agree that Arnautovic, Anderson, and Yarmolenko are one of the more potent attacking front trios in the league right now?
Yeah, I certainly would. But if I'd said that, you know, after they'd just lost the fourth game in succession, I'd have been carted away by men in white coats wearing a straitjacket. So, you know, we can only comment on what we see. We can't comment really on what hasn't happened yet, or we can't analyse stuff that hasn't. But Their turnaround has been quite remarkable. Again, I would have the same asterisks as Mark, but I was hugely impressed with their performance on Saturday, with the caveat you can only beat what's in front of you, and what was in front of them was just a pathetic rabble.
Chris says, where is this week's media anti-Jose meeting taking place? Can I come if I bring M&S biscuits and a nice bottle of red? Lars, what is wrong?
What, with that tweet? Or?
No, with Manchester United.
many, many things. And I think that's something that should be borne in mind. I mean, right now, the fashion is to jump up and down on Jose Mourinho's head, and I can see how that's a tempting thing to do. But it's fascinating, just looking at their results in general since Sir Alex Ferguson left, I struggle to think of an example of a team that has the highest revenue in the league and gives that, you know, such a poor return. And I think there are wider problems at the club. The more immediate problem seems to be that I thought this game looked completely different to the game against Watford. I think the effort that was being put in, the extent to which the players certainly appeared to be fighting for the manager and each other, see, there seems to have been a change there, and it looks that way to me anyway. It was very, very poor. And team selection slightly odd, ending up in a situation where you have McTominay in central defence and Lindelof being taken off and Baye on the bench. It's very, very bizarre. And I know he was praising McTominay's attitude, and I'm sure it's great, but this is very strange management all the same. And I do wonder, there's a lot of talk about Pogba. The more interesting perhaps is how the rest of the squad are responding to him. There's this, he subscribes to this thing he calls confrontational leadership, Mourinho. He's described it very clear that he'll criticize players in the media and he'll have a go at them and poke them and try to make them angry and want to prove him wrong. I just wonder if footballers nowadays, I mean, in 2010, Sir Alex Ferguson was talking about how players are different now. They're a bit cocooned by their agents and they're not as tough as they used to be and they're not as prepared to hold their hands up and accept responsibility. And 2010 was when Mourinho won the Champions League with Inter, and since then he's had trouble. He's experienced the squad to an extent turning on him, both at Real Madrid and at Chelsea, and perhaps now at United. I wonder if his way of poking players and trying to get a reaction just leads to them calling their agents and wanting transfers. I mean, I'm not sure it works what he's doing.
It's their worst start for 29 years. Gary Neville tweeted at the weekend, "This mess started when United sacked David Moyes after 8 months and we lost all sense of the values that the club had been built on for 100 years. It's not the manager, it's the lack of footballing leadership above him. They're bouncing all over the place with no plan." Mark, if you were Ed Woodward, what would you do?
Well, I mean, maybe the bigger mistake was appointing David Moyes in the first place, never mind sacking him after 8 months. I mean, he wasn't cut out for that job. I think that you have, at some stage, they are going to have to sack Jose Mourinho because you can't get rid of 20 footballers. And they were a disgrace, I think, the players on Saturday. The fewest sprints in the Premier League. And when you're at the stadium, like, and you can see stuff off the ball, and it was horrendous, really, to see a big team like that just not running. Really, jog. You saw, like, Pogba jogging towards Mark Noble rather than sort of trying to close him down.
He's not that fast anyway, Mark Noble. No, he's just not, have to go at three-quarter pace to get there.
In saying that, they were set up completely wrong. I mean, most people had it down as a diamond when the team sort of came through on the team sheet, and there weren't many sort of calling that back three. I mean, it hadn't worked when he tried it with Herrera in the back three against Tottenham, despite Mourinho saying that that it was their best game of the season or one of their best games of the season. They lost 3-0 in that game. And even in the first minute, West Ham got a corner and it was so easy to get down that side. He was doing his absolute nut on the sideline, Mourinho, but Shaw didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. Was he marking Yarmolenko or was he trying to get to Zabaleta? Lindelof has been dragged all over the place. McTominay wasn't in the right place in the defensive line. And he said afterwards that the reason he played the formation was because Martial doesn't defend diligently, and so he needed to put him into a position where he could just stand on Declan Rice. But you're Manchester United, you shouldn't be worried about what Declan Rice can do to you. You've already got midfielders in there. Just about every other big team around Europe now plays with three forwards that don't have that many defensive responsibilities. And, to be concerned about what West Ham are going to do to you just seems utterly bizarre, really.
But isn't Jose's MO to worry about what other teams are going to do to his team rather than what his team can do to them?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, and that's maybe why he's not suited for the role that he's currently got. I think that is a very fair point. But it did make me laugh. I think it was Martin Keown said about how clever Arnautovic was for the third goal. I mean, he literally stood there, waited for the pass, and there was 24 meters between McTominay and Chris Smalling. I mean, what do Manchester United do? I mean, they don't press the ball, but they don't sort of park the bus. They don't play counter-attack, but they don't play possession. They don't play short passes, they don't play long passes. They're just 11 players on a pitch.
And that's the most damning thing at all. For all we talk about his personnel conflicts, and I know I just droned on about for about 10 minutes about it, but it seems to be a much more, much worse for Mourinho. He's been there for 2 years now. And what does this team do? Like, what sort of identity has he imparted upon them? What are they better at than everyone else?
So what happens now?
He will get sacked.
And you, what, as soon as this pod is finished recording, or they've got Valencia and Newcastle, right, which are two winnable games, and then you've got an international break. So you'd be sensible to do it.
Well,
I
predicted months ago that he'd be gone before Christmas, possibly before the end of October, and I still reckon I'll be right.
I think you predicted he'd get sacked before Christmas of 2017 as well.
No.
Oh, no, that was Conte. I take it back.
But he's fallen out. He seems to have fallen out irreconcilably with Pogba. It looks like he's completely given up on Alexis Sanchez. Now, whatever about their attitude or their form, they are both really good footballers who Manchester United can't afford to get rid of. Probably they struggle to get rid of Alexis Sanchez, I think, because his wages are so high and he's been playing so badly since joining them. And there's, I think, another 10 or 11 players in the squad who are approaching the final year of their contracts. None of them are going to sign new contracts with Mourinho there, you would think.
But if
or they will certainly think twice about it. So getting rid of him is the only option.
But if there's a school of thought that the problem is higher up, then sacking Jose Mourinho doesn't necessarily fixes something in the short term.
The higher ups aren't going to sack themselves. No, they're not going to go, oh, this is all our fault, we'll step down.
But both of these things can be true. Like, it doesn't have to be either Woodward's fault or Mourinho's fault. You can have both of those two men not having done a fantastic job the last couple of 2 years. And I would say, yeah, if you sack Mourinho now and replace him with Zinedine Zidane, I don't think you fixed anything. Like, no. I mean, there are wider problems at that club. The complete lack of direction, the lack of football know-how and the leadership in general.
I mean, if ever a club was sort of crying out for a sporting director that could, you know, just take on the football responsibility alongside Ed Woodward, who obviously very good at the business side of running Manchester United. But I mean, Jose Mourinho doesn't strike me as the kind of coach that would enjoy somebody with that much power maybe coming in, above his head. So I think there will have to be a change. And you also wondered, stripping Pogba of the vice captaincy, I mean, Pogba's a pretty popular guy within that dressing room. And if you suddenly turn on him, okay, it's only one player and he's making a point, and maybe it was the right point to make, but he's friends with, you know, some pretty important players within that dressing room, and you just wonder if he's sort of the cliche lost the dressing room.
I thought there was a delicious sort of, I don't know if irony is the right word, but whatever, to the Pogba statements, because that used to be like Mourinho stock in trade, like the dig that's obvious enough that everyone knows what he's talking about, but vague enough that he can walk it back and blame the press if it becomes too much of a big thing. Like the sort of obvious but slightly vague sly dig used to be, Mourinho used to be the king of that, and Pogba coming out with the attack line, I thought he got Mourinho'd basically.
And then you've got the political point that he's making by playing with someone at centre half. I mean, does he even believe that himself, that he should be? But he's doing it quite clearly because he didn't get the centre halves that he wanted, and that's why he played Herrera there, and that's why he kept McTominay on.
Clearly it'd be better to be more fun for him to be there until the end of the season. He's playing Sanchez and Martial, who can't defend diligently at centre back.
But I mean, the thing, if it's a political move, like the time Redknapp didn't get the players he wanted at Tottenham and he didn't field a full bench, even though he had players he could put there, he just wanted to send a message. Like, if it is a political thing that you're putting McTominay at centre-half just to show the board, like, that looks very foolish when they have a centre-half that you spent a lot of money on the bench. Like, that kind of undercuts the message, I tend to think.
Chelsea 1, Liverpool 1. This was a good game, Barry, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Two superb goals. Two superb goalkeeping performances, some standout displays. David Luiz, possibly his best performance for Chelsea since he almost single-handedly won them the Champions League final in 2012, I thought. It was just really entertaining. Both teams sort of the complete opposite of Manchester United. They were going all out, hell for leather, attacking each other, and it was wonderful entertainment. I think a draw was probably a fair result. I think also that this is why I have my theory that Manchester City will win the league comfortably, because you'll have matches like this where teams like this take points off each other.
That's what I was going to say. Does this game, because everyone's basically said, well, Manchester City will probably win the league, but Liverpool are going to push them the closest. How close are Chelsea to Liverpool to being the team that don't quite win the league behind Manchester City?
Yeah, that's a good point, Max. I think that Chelsea have surprised me with how well they've started this season. And if, if Liverpool can, you know, beat Man City next week or not lose to them, then I think in a draw at Stamford Bridge in isolation it is a really good result. But it's the kind of point tally that Man City are going to put up this season. They got a century last time around. They're probably not going to be too far off it this time. So our draws any good? But I agree with Barry. I thought it was probably the best game Premier League wise I've seen this season. Two very good sides that wanted to play football. But
you're forgetting Cardiff nil, Newcastle nil.
Well, they had a funny moment with the missed penalty at the end. But I mean, I think what we've seen from Liverpool is now the strength and depth of the bench, and not just because Sturridge scored, but you think Naby Keita came on, made an impression. Shaqiri nearly got an equaliser before Sturridge did. And I suppose it's the dilemma for somebody like Daniel Sturridge. Do you go and play for a lesser Premier League team and start regularly, or get your minutes at Liverpool? And I think if he accepts his role within this Liverpool squad, he could be amazing for them just doing that.
But I guess that there's also a question of whether Daniel Sturridge has the physical capabilities to play 90 minutes once or twice a week, really. I mean, maybe this is the perfect role for him, that he's very well remunerated, he's playing for a top team, he's training with some very good players, and he still has the quality to come on and
element of genius, right, to that goal.
Oh, absolutely. It's unbelievable. And I think even her Sturridge's harshest critics, I don't think anyone's ever denied that he has that in him, like that he can score these amazing goals, that he is like one of the best natural finishers we've seen from England for many years. I mean, he's extraordinary, but the doubts are always there. But if he can make a valuable contribution to Liverpool in a way, in this sort of role, then that's great. And that's the kind of depth that Liverpool perhaps haven't had in the last couple of years.
Can anybody think of another way of saying Eden Hazard is incredibly good at football? Was he the star for Chelsea, or was there someone else you could pick out?
I think David Luiz was the man of the match. Eden Hazard is undeniably good, and I'm not for a second suggesting he didn't have a great game. But I would give it to David Luiz on this occasion, because he's much maligned. A lot of people think he's a clown of a player. I've said before, I think it's largely because he has distinctive hair. When he makes mistakes, he stands out. But he's a damn good player, a lot better than some give him credit for.
Are you suggesting if, say, I don't know, Simon Francis had the David Luiz hair, that he would get the column inches that Luiz gets, and Luiz would just sort of hover under the radar?
Sorry, Simon Francis?
The Bournemouth centre-back. Oh, just okay. Picked another centre-back.
Sorry, I couldn't place him.
Well, you'd know if he had this, because his hair is so
his hair is too sensible.
Wakefield Neil says, how far into outer space would you have to travel to stop seeing Alisson's goalkeeping kit? That's obviously a flippant question, but some of the luminous kits, this is my turn to sound like an old man, they're a little bit too luminous for me. Liverpool have got the orange marker pen away kit. There are clothes you should wear on the football pitch, and there are clothes you should wear when you're trying not to get knocked over by a lorry on a bicycle.
I saw Eintracht Frankfurt versus Hannover yesterday, and Hannover's away kit is an absolute disgrace in that regard.
Describe it for the few people that didn't watch Eintracht Frankfurt.
Oh yeah, I'm sure
Hannover.
Most people were tuned in, but it's just this luminous green that is just everything that you just described, really. Being wrong.
But is there not a science behind that? I mean, there's the idea that a big luminous thing is meant to catch the striker's eye and sort of put them off a little bit when they're about to finish. Or that
I wouldn't shoot. I'd be so disgusted. I would just walk off the pitch.
My sister, when she was young, knocked out one of her front teeth. And as you'll no doubt have noticed, my front teeth are quite pronounced, and as were her. And she was a goalkeeper in handball, the great sport of handball. And she would then, when the forward would come in, she'd jump out and do a big face, and there would be like a big teeth missing, and it would definitely put them off a little bit.
It's where Peter Schmeichel learned that kind of save, isn't it?
It is,
handball, yeah.
Yeah, the big star saint,
but no one has ever seen a handball goalkeeper make a save. That's the quite fun part of that entire game.
They do. It's very painful, and all. Like, they get hit in the face with that quite heavy ball sometimes. It's awful.
Man City 2, Brighton nil. They are top. Barry, is that it?
I think so.
Excellent. Arsenal 2. And it's difficult, isn't it, to try and say something new about Manchester City, and then Manchester City fans get upset that we don't really talk about them for that long.
Yeah, that was the first time I did a live show with the pod. The first question you gave me was like, Man City, quite good. Yeah. I was like, what are you meant to say?
Lars refused to answer.
Well, I just figured I was sat next to Sid Lowe, and if you want to hear someone talk about Pep Guardiola's Man City 9 times out of 10, well, to be fair, 10 times out of 10, you'd prefer to have Sid talking about that.
Say. Pep looked genuinely thrilled with their performance. So he described it as outstanding. So, you know, that's praise indeed, because he can normally find some sort of fault with them, no matter how good they've been. And I think he was probably going to head off to Paris then, maybe to watch his new buddy, his new best friend forever, Tommy Fleetwood, play golf. I don't know if he went over, but that was a weird friendship to hear of. But
I haven't heard of it. I've been away this weekend.
Well, Pep was out on the course playing with Tommy Fleetwood when he learned that Manchester City had won the title last season.
Ah, but Tommy Fleetwood does seem like quite a nice chap, doesn't he?
Yeah, we were just saying on the sports desk earlier, we all liked him on Thursday. Now we're all sick of him. He's been overexposed this weekend.
I mean, there'll be less Tommy Fleetwood for the next.
I think the
year
one
or
thing
so.
To remember about City, and we got a reminder on Saturday, is that Kevin De Bruyne is still to come back from injury. And the camera cut to him in the stand with his girlfriend and his son. His young son looked very bored, big yawn for the cameras. But that would be a worry for any potential title rivals.
I was wondering that they break at such pace, right? That first goal was sort of classic City.
Yeah.
I wonder if at some point they sort of let the opposition have it for a bit, you know, attack a little bit, and then they just go, ah, oh, cheers.
Yeah. It was like the first time that Brighton attacked, really, and that they were done on the counter, which, I think there is definitely some theory behind allowing the team to have the ball and then you attack them. I mean, it's just, I mean, they had 80% possession, Man City. I thought the second goal didn't get enough to sort of talk about, so maybe I can change that. But I thought Aguero's part in it was absolutely sensational. And because it's Aguero, we just take it for granted that he's capable of doing that. But I thought it was a brilliant move involving Raheem Sterling as well. And it was fantastic. And then he was taken off as well.
But I think that's also part of the theory for why you want to play out from the back all the time if you have players like this, is because that invites the opponents to come onto you. There's this extraordinary fear, like, oh no, like, you play out from the back, they'll close you down. And that's the whole point, like, is you want them to come at you so you have a bit of space to break into.
There was one brilliant goal mouth scramble where basically sort of
I think City had 5 shots in 5 seconds.
Sort of like platoon. It's like the Brighton defenders, you know, sort of Duffy and the rest of them just like flailing around, just trying to get something in the way. It was just so much fun. City play Hoffenheim. We're talking to Archie later, so he can give us the lowdown on them in the Champions League. Also in that group, Lyon play Shakhtar. And that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll rattle through the rest of the Premier League. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Before we get on to Arsenal's 5th win in a row, in the break, Lars was beating himself up. He sort of likes to analyse his pod performance as we go, whereas sort of Barry just sits back. Lars, you're very upset with yourself because you wanted to praise Marko Arnautovic and now the moment's passed.
Yeah,
so it doesn't make any sense in this part of the pod.
Yeah, I saw that tweet coming in. Are we just going to hammer United, or are we going to talk about West Ham being good? And I thought that was a very fair point. And I think the ongoing sort of renaissance of Marko Arnautovic is a fabulous thing, because he was a very silly player for a very long time, very much in the sort of Nicholas Bentner category of a man who perhaps, I mean, Mourinho, gloriously, Mourinho once said he's a nice guy, but he has the attitude of a child. And famously, he was on loan at Inter for a season, and that was the season they won the Champions League. And then the next year, he played at Werder Bremen, and he upset quite a few people at Werder Bremen because he turned up with a Champions League winner 2010 printed on his boots. Now, I'm going to disqualify you, Langdon, because you probably know, but can anyone guess how many minutes he played for Inter in their glorious Champions League campaign?
I mean, naught.
That's correct. No minutes. He made the bench twice. Was not in the squad for any of the other games.
Surely those boots are then ironic, aren't they?
Well, I don't think at that point of his life, not so much. And he also, I mean, in the league that season, he made 3 appearances for a total of 55 minutes on the pitch. And so at Bremen, he also got on the wrong side of a lot of people. According to an article in the Deutsche Welle, he suggested at one point that the coach and sporting directions should return to whence they came, i.e. their mother's reproductive organs. and only Alof's and Schauf's lack of fluent Serbian stood between Arnautovic and an immediate dismissal. So, you know, he has had this period of his life where he, for all his extraordinary talent, just didn't make anything of it. And I think it is really interesting that he has clearly matured. There's been none of this nonsense off the pitch. At West Ham, he's even working hard on the pitch. Like, he's playing really well. And I do think we're too quick, and I include myself and all of us in the media in that, too quick to write off players who behave eccentrically or do stupid things. I mean, these are very young men who are put in a position of wealth and attention that they're probably not well equipped to handle all of them. And God bless Arnautovic for like being consistently very, very good for West Ham. Like, right now, if you make a non-top 6 11 in the Premier League, you'd have him in there, I'd say.
If only you'd brought this up during the West Ham.
Yeah.
I would argue that when, back in the mists of time 4 weeks ago when West Ham were terrible, he was the main culprit when Martin Keown, I think it was, on Match of the Day, did a sort of pointing out who was standing in the centre circle with their hands on their hips while the match was going on around them. It was none other than Marko Arnautovic. So I would,
but find me a Premier League centre forward who runs around for 90 minutes solid when the team is being trounced. I mean, that will happen if you play up front.
Well, anyway, listen, you had your chance and you missed it last. Arsenal 2, Watford 0, two late goals enough for Arsenal. Could have gone either way this game, Mark.
Well, success had the chance, didn't he, for Watford, and chipped it just the wrong side of the post as far as they were concerned. I mean, Arsenal, for a team that's won seven on the spin now in all competitions, it still doesn't feel particularly convincing at the back. But they are, and it reminded me of the West Ham game, actually, where West Ham had chances at the Emirates and then they finished them off with a couple of late goals. And what I would say about Unai Emery is he's not afraid to make big calls, and I think that was maybe a suggestion against Arsene Wenger.
Are you saying Wenger would have kept Petr Cech on?
That was ironic, wasn't it, that the one time Petr Cech tries to boot the ball long after all the criticism of him playing it short is when he does his hamstring. But no, he took Aubameyang off, he took Ozil off, obviously, at Chelsea. But at 0-0, you wouldn't have thought that taking Aubameyang off, you know, would have been this kind of normal reaction. But Arsenal are finding ways to kind of keep in tabs with the top four at the moment, and I think that can only be good while they bed in under a new manager and clearly not got everything he wants in place yet.
The club have apparently withdrawn a contract offer which was agreed with Aaron Ramsey, whose current terms run out next summer. He signed his last contract in December 2012 along with Kieran Gibbs, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Jack Wilshere and Carl Jenkinson. If he leaves, Jenkinson will be the last man standing from that crew. Everton 3, Fulham 0. First win in 5 for Everton. Pretty comprehensive that, Barry?
Yeah. Apparently Everton have the total hex on Fulham in league encounters. Very impressive performance from Gylfi Sigurdsson, who scored 2 wonderful goals. I think his first one has possibly been overshadowed by Sturridge's, because that was just a remarkable curling shot inside the post with his left foot. And I think any other weekend it would certainly be the standout goal of the weekend. But yeah, Everton are kind of a funny team. They haven't hit their stride yet, but that was a very good performance. Slightly disappointed with Fulham, I think. I expected more of them, but
they had chance, and nil-nil, Sessegnon and Schürrle both had chances, and then goals do change games. I do like, I mean, Jordan Pickford signed a contract. I'm not sure who was running through, but overhit it.
And it was Vieto, wasn't it?
Vieto overhits it. So Pickford makes what is a pretty regulation stop, and then celebrates like he's won the World Cup. But why not, you know? I mean, it seems ridiculous, but it was actually quite fun.
Yeah, I think it was more ridiculous than fun, really, Max.
Okay, there you are. Well, all new serious autumn dress language. No fun here.
I think you're fine.
Theo Walcott's impressed me, Lars. Has he impressed you?
Yes, he's fine. He's been good. I'm more delighted to see Sigurdsson being used in his natural habitat again. It's something we've seen with him. He came through being amazing at Swansea as a central playmaker and being the creative fulcrum of the team. Went to Spurs where he was rotated a bit and played out of position and was ineffective. Went back to Swansea where he was again the creative fulcrum of the team, was very good. And then Chelsea, and then Everton signed him and then play him out of position and rotate him. And guess what? He wasn't very effective. Turns out that putting your record signing out of position to accommodate Wayne Rooney isn't actually the smartest thing you can do. But playing him as a number 10 now, and if he gets a consistent run in that role, I think we'll see the old Gylfi again, the year of the Gylfi. It's happening.
Wolves 2, Southampton 0. Wolves are up to 8th, unbeaten in 5, 3 wins and 2 draws. Barry, I mean, it was late again, but it was impressive.
Sure, look, Southampton. I call it. I had to do a preview this on Friday. I just went 2-0 Wolves.
But Southampton, they're not going to go down, Southampton, because of these three other teams. So.
Well, that's the thing. What are they for? Southampton, why? They're not good enough to do anything interesting. They're not bad enough to do anything interesting. They're managed by a guy. He must have all sorts of blackmail material.
Well, to be fair, on the Mark Hughes monometer, he didn't moan. That's 2 out of 2. He's on a rich run of form in the moaning stakes.
I think maybe it's been brought to his attention just how tedious his moaning has become, and maybe he's making a conscious effort to stop. But yeah, it was a pretty routine victory for Wolves, and it was Southampton.
Are we absolutely certain they won't go down? Like, I'd be
fairly confident.
Because, okay, it looks a bit miserable for Newcastle, but you got to bear in mind their fixture list has been horrendous. And okay. I tend to think that Rafa, you know, if you'd trust someone to figure it out, he'd be on my list of people I'd trust to figure it out somehow. Can't say the same for Mark Hughes, I have to say.
One thing I would say about Wolves, Adama Traore and Matt Doherty down that right-hand side, something else.
Traore's great fun, isn't he?
It's so fast. Like the Flash, but Matt Doherty can't get in the Ireland team because apparently he doesn't get forward enough. So I think Roy Keane was at Molyneux.
How far forward do you need to get? Literally on the opposition goal line.
I'm pretty sure that's the reason. It might be that he doesn't stay back enough, but anyway, Roy Keane was there to watch his performance on Saturday, and I would be interested to hear what he'll have in his dossier or report for Martin O'Neill. But the two of them just tore Southampton apart down that right-hand side.
Yeah, I think that's maybe been one of the biggest success stories of Nuno. It's not that he's been able to, you know, bring the best out of Neves and Moutinho and players like that, but actually really improve what was, you know, a pretty ordinary player, I think, and now and even Wolves fans would have probably had their concerns as to whether Doherty would make it in the Premier League, but he looks very comfortable. Cody would be another one at centre half. Was he able to play that role? But we spoke earlier about, you know, Mourinho and maybe not having a plan. This Wolves team, every single player knows what they're doing. There's a defined style of play, there's a way of them just being, the sum of their parts is just outstanding, really.
I think Nuno as well has picked the same team for every single game. Yeah. So he is apparently able to keep the guys who aren't in the starting 11 happy as well, and that's a huge thing.
I was a bit sad that the Johnny, who scored the second goal, isn't just a Brazilian with one name, Johnny, and is a Spaniard called Jonathan Castro Otto. I was very much hoping that had happened.
That made you sad?
It made me sad. I was just like, oh, I like the fact there's a bloke just called Johnny, but he has other names, just in case you, like I, wondered. And if you didn't, then don't worry about it. Huddersfield 0, Spurs 2. Huddersfield look in a lot of trouble, Mark, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they just haven't got any goals in them. De Potro was unlucky with that volley that smashed off the bar. They actually have more possession than Tottenham, 53%, which is a slight surprise, really. But I think Tottenham had just eased off, maybe with one eye on Barcelona on Wednesday. There's just a lack of quality, particularly in the final third. And there's not, you know, I think Wagner is a great coach who will go on to better things. But what can you do if you've got players that are not as good?
There's this remarkable statistic that Harry Kane is the leading scorer at the John Sid Stadium since Huddersfield got into the Premiership with 4. And that tells you all you need to know about Huddersfield. David Wagner, like Pep, was immensely proud of his team's performance, but they lost. They couldn't score again. And I could see them possibly rescuing themselves if they can find goals somewhere, but where are they going to come?
Harry Kane played incredibly well, actually. And I thought Lars looked like a bit like the old Harry Kane, you know, holding it up, turning his man, showing a bit of that slight turn of pace that he has.
Yeah, he's had some shots in the last two games. I would hesitate to I mean, there's been a very consistent trend with him since the injury he sustained against Bournemouth that he doesn't, you know, he doesn't take as many shots as he used to. He's not getting to the same number of chances before. And now he's played very well in two games, but they were against the very accommodating Brighton and an even more accommodating Huddersfield. And I would hesitate to say that the trend we've seen for the better part of, you know, many, many months is completely reversed based on two games. But also scoring these goals will give him a lot of confidence, which is huge for a striker. And even if he isn't quite as mobile as he was pre-injuries, I still think he moves not quite as fluid as he did. He's a very good player, and he's one of those guys who works very hard at his game. He's one of those guys who, if there's a flaw, if there's something he needs to improve, he'll work on it and try to improve. And because of that, I think whatever physical issues he might have, I think he'll find a way of getting around it.
Alex, Spurs have had the very handsome Paolo Gazzaniga in goal this weekend, given Lloris and Vorma also pretty good looking chaps. Do they have the most handsome goalkeeping set in the Premier League or even the world? Can you scroll through the goalkeepers in the Premier League?
My mind is immediately drawn to Coventry City in the glory days with Steve Grisovich.
who was his reserve keeper? Who was his wingman?
I don't know.
It's a tricky question. I perhaps should have given you a little bit more time.
I mean, the Gea Sergio Romero double act, pretty good looking. And where does Lee Grant fit in as the number three? Probably
put Lee Grant in a suit, I think he could, you know.
Yeah, he's maybe not Gazzaniga, though, is he?
No, possibly not.
I would not say De Gea is particularly dashing.
No, but, you know, probably better looking than the Heaton Pope Hart triumvirate at...
Well, I have a face like a smacked arse. Yeah, no position to criticise anyone.
That's a very good point. You know, you've got style on to the right with Mark Langdon.
Wing Commander Langdon there, you know, looking exceptionally raffish. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, our editor's thrown in the towel this weekend, so I've got to look sharp, haven't I, for the first day back.
Absolutely right.
You were saying that your editor being Bruce Millington, who stood down. Bruce, big Crystal Palace fan, lovely guy, but Bruce, you were saying that Jose Mourinho is in the betting to succeed him, but you're not.
Karen Brady and Jose Mourinho are both quoted, and yeah, I'm not.
I should mention.
Should we try and make inquiries about getting a price
for Jose Mourinho? I'm
very happy at the club.
So if Mourinho does get the editor's job at the Racing Post, you know,
do you think
morale would immediately crumble?
I think, I mean, after today's pod, I'm definitely stuffed.
You'd be first under the bus.
He hangs Langdon out to dry again after another terrible edition of the Racing Post. On the subject of what people look like, it's important, Lars, that we don't just mention the evil conservative Nick Timothy, but also, as was drawn to our attention recently, the games teacher from Grange Hill back in the 80s. I might not remember, but it's really uncanny. Spurs play Barcelona on Wednesday. We should mention that. We'll talk to Sid about Barcelona's form, but that might give Spurs some hope in a game that they really do need to win.
Yeah, I the only thing is the injuries, because Vertonghen and Dembele went off. We don't know yet how serious they were, but obviously Ali and Eriksen have been out, Lloris as well, Aurier, that's quite a significant number. Pochettino needs a few of them back.
Yes, Lars?
I mean, must win, I guess, but I mean, they're 2 points behind Chelsea, like, who we just talked about as title candidates. So the whole Spurs in crisis thing is maybe, I mean...
And they've only played two home games as well.
Yeah, we might be running away with ourselves a little bit there. I think they're not.
Okay. Newcastle 0, Leicester 2. Yes, so we've mentioned... There was a moment, Barry, where Mike Ashley was in the crowd and the crowd was sort of singing a not entirely delightful song to him, and he was sort of laughing away. And I was just sitting there going, why would you put yourself through that? I mean, I'm sure if I was sat in a place with 50,000 people might sing rude songs to me, but I just wouldn't be there. You know what? It must be. It's a strange emotional thing to laugh at the pain and misery. Just, am I articulating this well or not? I don't know.
I know what you mean. That was his second game to attend in a row. He was at Selhurst Park last week. Now at St. James Park. I don't know why you would go to a ground where you're almost certainly going to be the subject of, at best, ridicule and at worst, you know, seething anger, where you might be in a place where you feel your safety is possibly endangered. But, you know, he's a funny character, funny peculiar. I mean, not funny, haha.
We're not going to a stadium tour.
we've heard about his, you know, rather eccentric board meetings, which tend to involve copious amounts of lager swilling, then puking into a fireplace. So he marches to the beat of his own drum. There's talk that Peter Kenyon, formerly of Chelsea and Manchester United, is possibly thinking about a takeover. This could be more nonsense like we had last year with that Amanda Staveley lady. But I don't, to answer your question, I'm getting here in the end, I have no idea why you would put yourself through that, but maybe he's just very thick-skinned and doesn't care.
On the pitch...
Or wants to give the impression that he's very thick-skinned and doesn't care.
On the pitch, I think it was a penalty, right? But it seems so unfair on Yedlin and on Newcastle, because he's so close to the ball. I don't understand the rules and everyone else does, or...
No, there is an inconsistency to the rules. Sorry, Lars.
No, I don't think anyone understands the handball rule at this point, and if they say so, they're lying. I think that was one of the big takeaways of the VAR thing in the summer. So often with these handballs, you just say, oh, well, I guess the ref saw it from this angle and whatever, and you just go on with it. With the VAR, everyone can see the replay, and it turns out no one agrees on what is and isn't handball. We had the very strange spectacle of former referees, you know, recently retired top referees, completely giving different takes on whether a handball was correct or not.
Because so I wonder, like, that his hand is up, and it was it Spurs Brighton, wasn't it? Glenn Murray's hand was up, but that free kick was quite a long way away. He had time to make some sort of decision himself to put his hand there. But Yedlin is, I'm going to say, 0.001 seconds from that Maguire strike.
I think if you're a defender, you just have to not jump with your arms in the air in the box, because if the ball hits you, it'll be a pen. But I think the wider point is the handball rule needs to be clarified in some way, because it just doesn't... I've tried very hard, and I've spoken to referees, and they all say different things. It doesn't make any sense.
Do you have a little list of you, Dermot Gallagher? He said this. Graham Poll, he said this.
I think every football journalist has their go-to referee for when they...
Who's yours, Barry?
Dermot Gallagher.
Is it?
Yeah.
I ring Kalina.
Do you?
Yes. He doesn't respond. But Kennedy, right, who last season, at the end of last season, we were saying, oh, he is, I mean, why this guy's a starting for Chelsea, we do not know. He was brilliant for Newcastle. He's obviously had, we mentioned that penalty against Cardiff early, he's had an interesting start to this season. But to give away the corner from where he was for the second goal is actually stunningly impressive. I don't think he could, if he tried to do that sort of weird overhead kick clearance from... I mean, it was impossible to give away a corner in that position.
It was, and I mean, he hasn't delivered, but I just wonder if we're giving Rafa a bit too much of an easy ride, you know, in that we're blaming Mike Ashley for everything that's gone wrong for Newcastle. But I mean, at some stage, he has still got 11 players, and he is Rafa Benitez, and I kind of expect a little bit more. I know they've had a tough run of fixtures, but he didn't have to fall out with Mitrovic. You know, they've got problems up front. He could have been playing Mitrovic. Dwight Gayle got to be a better option than Hosselu up front. At least he can run in behind. So everyone says, why is Rafa staying at Newcastle? Maybe this is one of the reasons, because if it goes wrong, he can just look at Mike Ashley and say, it's your fault. And most of it is, but I just wonder, at some stage, you know, he has to get on with managing this team and squad of players.
Cardiff 1, Burnley 2. So they picked up just 1 point in their first five games, Burnley. This is their second win on the bounce. Lars, I presume you're devastated.
No, this is amazing, because we have the Burnley we know and love are back. They allowed 19 shots against them and had 3, and they won 2-1. That is pure...
against Cardiff.
That's the Deitchism at its purest form. You know, this is the sort of black magic that the Church of Deitch was built on. It doesn't make any sense, but, you know, God bless them.
Tonight, Bournemouth play Crystal Palace. In the Football League, great news for the Boilermen of West Brom, who are now top of the league after a 3-2 away win at rock bottom Preston. Second place Leeds were held at Sheffield Wednesday and Friday night. Did anyone see Adam Reach's absolute banger for the Owls? Sort of left foot volley from sort of the 35
second,
yards.
The second best volley in the Championship game involving Sheffield Wednesday in sort of a week, wasn't it? After the McGinn shinner, as Barry called it. No, it was a fantastic goal.
That's the way it's going. I'm thinking the Puskás Award needs to have a separate Championship category, the way it's gone this year. It's crazy.
Millwall and Ipswich joined Preston in the bottom three. We've mentioned Stephen Darby, the Bolton defender forced to retire after being diagnosed with motor neurone disease. Lovely moment after Craig Noon headed the winner for them against Derby County, going over to celebrate with his teammate in the crowd. The Trotters paid tribute to their teammate before kickoff by each walking onto the pitch wearing shirts with the defender's name and number 23 on the back. On Craig Noon, there was a very good moment where a Sky Sports News presenter who clearly didn't know quite enough about football called him Craig No One. In League One, Portsmouth lead the way after a 3-1 win at Rochdale. Bottom side Plymouth lost at home to Doncaster. They still haven't won. Lee Catamol scored his third of the season, Barry. That's his best tally of his career.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
No, that's it. You're allowed to be speechless at Lee Catamol scoring three in a season. They drew with Coventry.
I mean, a two in a game was beyond the realms of possibility. I definitely thought that was it for the season.
He might start coming up with his own celebrations.
Huddersfield might sign him.
In League Two, leaders Lincoln won 2-0 at Cheltenham. Bottom side Macclesfield got their third point of the season. They're still without a win. They drew with Forest Green, who have won a Momentum for Change award from the UN for their commitment to sustainable living and being the greenest club in the world. Still didn't get them a win at Macclesfield, which is actually quite hard not to, to win there. A thought for the Stevenage fans on the club coach. Carlisle away, denied progress by a weekend closure of the A66 and just had to turn around and go back home. But they still won 1-0. And Cambridge were unlucky to concede 3 second half goals. going down 4-2 at Newport. Mark?
Oh, sorry, did you see as well one of Cambridge's rivals sacked their manager last night, Max?
Oh, I haven't. With breaking news. I can't believe it. Let's go. Mark Langdon, breaking news from League Two. Tell me all about it.
Well, it was the former Tottenham fullback Dean Austin booted out at the Cobblers.
Oh, a great shame.
Boudet by the Cobblers.
Yeah. Are they Northampton League Two?
They're right down the bottom of League Two.
Are they? Oh, I've always had them. I've had them in League One for quite a long time. It's very hard to keep track. I preferred it when Northampton played on the cricket pitch. They used to play. Anglia News were the highlights, and Bobby Barnes would always miss a penalty. But they played on just half a cricket pitch. They had a bit of a stand, and the rest was just, you know, some people playing rounders over on the left. Fitbar, Barry. Over to you.
Hearts cemented their 5-point lead at the top of the table with a win against St Johnson. Next up for them is a trip to Rangers, who were beaten by Livingston. 1-0 yesterday. Dolly Mengus with the goal there. During that game, the assistant ref, Callum Dodds, was hit by a missile thrown from the away end and it cut his head, and he had to stop and get treatment on that. So that wasn't so good. Sky's Emma Dodds flagged this up on Twitter, and it prompted no end of finger pointing and whataboutery because she failed to mention that it came from the Rangers end, which upset lots of Celtic fans, this being Fitba. Celtic beat Aberdeen 1-0. And the main story in Scotland centres around the decision of the Scottish Professional Football League to host or to stage both League Cup semi-finals in Hampden Park on the same day. So Neil Doncaster has called it a regrettable inconvenience, while Hearts boss Craig Levein described it as an absolute madness and beyond belief. And Aberdeen's Derek McInnes said it's really unfair. Police Scotland, by contrast, have said it's entirely manageable. But basically, so you're going to have Aberdeen playing Rangers at 12 p.m. in Hampden on October the 28th. When that ends, the stadium will be cleared out. Then Hearts will play Celtic at 7:45. So you'll have supporters of all four teams converging on Glasgow on the same day. Rangers and Celtic haven't played in Glasgow on the same day, in separate matches for 35 years, and what could possibly go wrong? Now, another problem is that Aberdeen, they're in the early game. The first train out of Aberdeen to Glasgow doesn't arrive in Glasgow till 15 minutes into the first half. So it's a bit of a shambles all round. The SPFL...
You'd have thought they might have a meeting about this before noticing some of these potential problems.
Oh no, I think they have... All these problems were flagged up, but SPFL Chief Exec Neil Doncaster, he insists there's no other way of doing it because they're contractually obliged to play certain games at Hampden unless the police say it can't be done. Now, the obvious solution is to play one at Hampden, one at Murrayfield, but because the police have said they're happy with the current situation, it's going to go ahead like this. And, you know, they're sort of seem to be leaving things in the lap of the gods. It may pass off without incident, but I can't see the point in tempting fate, really.
In the FA Women's Super League, Arsenal are top. They won 3 out of 3. Manchester City won at Birmingham, 3-2. Birmingham second, Manchester City third. Has anyone seen the brilliant own goal from Manchester City's Abby McManus?
I have heard about it.
It is a back pass from the opposition half, which goalkeeper Ellie Roebuck misjudged, and it bounced over her head, which is... It's just a terrible look for a goalkeeper because you've got nowhere to go, really, apart from to turn around and go, I just shouldn't have let that ball bounce over my head. But still, Manchester City won that game, and that'll do for part two. And part three, we'll begin in Europe with Sid in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Before we go to Sid in Spain, Barry, this Cristiano Ronaldo story is... potentially very damaging for him, isn't it?
Absolutely. He's dismissed as fake news these allegations that he raped a woman in Las Vegas 9 years ago. A woman named Catherine Mayorga, who's now 34, alleges that he raped her in his hotel room after a night out in a Las Vegas nightclub in June 2009. And this was flagged up last year by Der Spiegel, the German sort of investigative newspaper. They're reputable, you know, this isn't some tabloid. And they purport or claim to have in their possession documents in which Ronaldo admitted to one of his own lawyers that during the course of their sexual encounter, the woman's asked them to stop and said, no, this is, you know, this isn't going to happen. So that's potentially very damaging. Ronaldo has already paid a significant sum of money, hush money, to this woman, but she's now announced that she's decided to bring it to the public attention because of the whole Me Too movement. Whether that is true or not, I don't know, but... Ronaldo's supporters are up in arms accusing him of, you know, trying to make more money out of him. But, yeah, it's worrying for him. And, it, you know, obviously, if what she's saying is true, is a terrible thing to have happened to her. But it will be interesting to see. You know, Ronaldo's lawyers have rubbished it. Ronaldo himself has rubbished it. But Der Spiegel are standing over their... story, and it's a 9,000 word story. You know, it goes into some detail, some of it quite disturbing, and it will be interesting to see what happens.
It's legally sensitive, as you've said a number of times. The way you have to report these things is that he and his people are denying it, they're sticking to their story, and we have to see basically how it plays out, don't we? From that, let's go to Spain. We can speak to Sid about the weekend's results. Sid, good morning. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. A lot of people enjoyed the secret track at the end of last week's pod of Estella and you and the noise that she was making. Is she calm today?
Well, she's not in the office. She's not in the office with me, so I think she must be asleep somewhere, which is always a good sign until someone rings the doorbell.
Listen, so Real Madrid nil, Atletico Madrid nil, not a fascinating game.
No, truth be told, it wasn't. It was a game where I thought, certainly in the first half at least, I thought Atletico looked really quite good. Then Madrid put a lot of pressure on the second, dominated the game. Curiously enough, actually, once Gareth Bale had gone off and they added an extra man to midfield and had very, very much more control. But in truth, it was a game with very few chances. There were, though, three very clear chances. I mean, there weren't many, but the three that there were very, very clear chances. One-on-ones, and all three of them saved by the goalkeepers. Of course, Courtois, who used to play for Atletico Madrid, and Oblak, who still does. And three kind of similar saves as well. You know, very, very big goalkeepers coming out and doing almost that kind of Peter Schmeichel-style thing of making themselves very, very wide, coming out in kind of a star formation. And they were the men that sort of left their mark in the derby and decided it. So it means we're in this situation now where La Liga looks a bit weird. I mean, the teams are in the right position. Barcelona, Real Madrid, Sevilla, Atletico, the top four. But with far fewer points than anyone expected at this point.
And is that a total surprise to everyone?
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, this kind of thing. I mean, I'm writing about this now and trying to get my mind around whether I'm going to be stupid enough or optimistic enough to think that this is a really significant change and La Liga has become fantastically competitive, because you can look at it and say, you know, the difference is really significant. So you take the top three teams in Spain and they've dropped 23 points. Already compared to eight in the Premier League, or if you take it to the fourth team, it's 31 points dropped in Spain compared to 14 in England. Now, obviously, one way of looking at that, and naturally enough, the way that most people in Spain are looking at it is Madrid and Barcelona are a bit shit. You know, they're nowhere near as good as they should be. Atletico Madrid have had a wobble as well. But I suppose, you know, the optimist in me wants to see this being more than that, wants to see this as being a bit more competitive across the league. Now, I suspect that this won't last. And as I say, the agenda is focused on the failings of Madrid and Barcelona in particular, and to a slightly lesser extent, Atletico. But, you know, all in all, it's better this way. It's certainly a lot more fun.
Hi, Sid. In terms of Atletico, they obviously spent a lot of money in the summer. Is there any pressure on Diego Simeone to bring a better style of play? Obviously, a 0-0 draw at the Bernabeu is a good result, but it was pretty sort of Atleti at their best in terms of what they do. Is there any pressure on him to be more progressive?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think this is a recurring theme a little bit. So if you look back over the last four seasons, I think you'll probably find at least two, maybe three of them. I'm trying to remember which ones. I think 2015 and even actually early last season. And I think it's happened again this, but they signed players in the summer that made you think, okay, this is going to be a little bit more creative. And then they start and it's like it doesn't quite fit. It's like they're not entirely convinced. And then there's a moment in, and each year actually it's getting sooner. I think in 2005, it's happening kind of November, December time. It's already happened this year. There's a moment where there's kind of a sense that this isn't really us. So kind of let's go back to doing what we used to do. And probably the best example of this is that at the first Atletico Madrid home game this season, they did like a little kind of celebration before the game of Lamar and Griezmann, of course, World Cup winners with France. And Simeone spoke to the fans after the game, took the microphone and basically said, don't let people whisper. And his words literally were, don't let people sweeten your ear. In other words, don't let people whisper sweet nothings into your ear and make you believe that you should be something other than what you are. No, we are Atletico Madrid. We cannot be compared to Real Madrid and Barcelona, and we cannot have the pressure on us to do the things that Real Madrid and Barcelona do, which obviously fundamentally means we shouldn't be expected to compete for the title. But also, I think, implicitly has that message about style. So, you know, this summer they buy Lamar, they buy Gelson Martins, they bring Rodri into midfield, and there was a sense they would play 4-3-3 and it'd be a bit more expansive. And they've, I suppose, evolved out and evolved back again into 4-4-2. So I think this weekend against Real Madrid, I personally think the first half showed that they're a very good team. Atletico, the use of the ball was good. They created a couple of chances. But you're right, they then looked brilliant when it came to the defensive resistance. And Jimenez in particular, I thought was absolutely fantastic. So I think you're right. That kind of debate is there. You know, should you be more expansive? Should you be better to watch? But internally, it's a debate that Simeone has sort of partially embraced, but at the same time tried to reject. And I think ultimately Atletico Madrid will continue to be Atletico Madrid, but at this point I'll defend them a little bit and say I don't think they're ever quite as purely defensive as people made out.
Barcelona have dropped 7 points in a week. They're still top, but will
6 days as well, because it was Sunday through to Saturday. 6 days, 7 points.
Will Spurs fans, you know, they'll look and go, "Oh, Barcelona look out of form at the moment."
Yeah, and they'd be right to. They would be right to think that. I mean, bear in mind that this weekend, both Leo Messi and Sergio Busquets were left out of the team. And they were left out of the team thinking about Wembley. And then what happened is what's happened in games, I think maybe three, four times already this season, which is that you make the change, you make the rotation, you realise, bloody hell, this doesn't work, and you put them back in again. And so Messi and Busquets were both on the pitch by, I think, the 55th minute. I think it was 52, 53 minutes when those two came on. We saw something similar when they played really poorly up at Anoeta against Real Sociedad. Busquets had to come on, having been left out against Leganés when they were defeated in midweek. They'd left out Jordi Alba and Luis Suarez, two of the four players who played every game, started every game until then. I think actually played every minute until then as well. And both of them were sent on. And each time it didn't work. So, of course, that leads to two arguments. One is, don't rotate because your starting 11 is your best 11 and what you've got in reserve isn't good enough. But also it's true that in these last three games, they've put players back in and it's either been too late or they haven't been able to turn it around. And the difference that Messi made at the weekend was extraordinary. And I thought one or two players played okay. Suarez played okay. Coutinho played okay. But there is a Barcelona with Messi and a Barcelona without Messi, and Barcelona wanted to rest him and they wanted him fully fit for Wembley. And I guess, you know, he won't be awful because he played 30, 40 minutes at the weekend. But Barcelona don't look good at all. And I think Spurs are entitled to feel relatively optimistic.
And what about Valencia? They go to Old Trafford. They don't win, but they don't lose.
Yeah. I mean, this weekend, they won for the first time this season, seven games into year. I mean, this goes back to what I was saying before about the whole sense of the kind of the slightly weird nature of La Liga, where no one is without a victory now. Valencia were the last team, and no one has gone unbeaten. And all across the league, people are beating each other. Valencia are a curious side. As you say, they haven't played awfully, but it hasn't looked good. And they were pretty poor against Juventus in the first Champions League game as well. So I think in that sense, you know, Manchester United might look at it and think they're favourites. Although, of course, and I say this as a guy who covers Spanish football, not English football, so you will know a million times better than me, it's not like Man United look particularly good either.
Sid, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure. Cheerio.
Cheers. Sid Lowe, out in Spain. From Spain, let's go to Germany. Archie Rintutt has this report. As yet, we don't know if it mentions whether his trousers have been returned to him.
Welcome to the Kebab Shop, where six games into the Bundesliga season, an all-too-rare title race is threatening to happen. Just 3 points separate the top six, because Bayern, on 13 points, suffered their first defeat of the season. Here to beat them 2-0 in Berlin on Friday night, one more goal, and they would have even gone above them. Bayern had their chances, but Here to good value for the win, so it meant on Saturday, Werder Bremen could have gone above Bayern. Instead, they lost 2-1 at previously winless Stuttgart. The headline from that game, though, was Bremen's goal. Former Leicester keeper Ron Robertsiele performing a Peter Enkelman in that Birmingham derby all those years ago. Teammate Borna Sosa throwing the ball in. Sosa was adjusting his shin pad, hurriedly tried to control the ball, but instead he ended up just touching it in. Still, Stuttgart won, meaning Gladbach were the next team who could have moved above Bayern with a hefty win it would have had to be, but instead they drew 2-2 at Wolfsburg. So it was up to Dortmund to beat Leverkusen if the Bundesliga was to have a new leader. They were 2-0 down and playing poorly after 65 minutes, but Dortmund roared back to win 4-2. Jadon Sancho's introduction was key. He came on with 22 minutes to play. He set up Marco Reus's equaliser and Alcacer's fourth. So a goal and five assists now for Sancho in 124 minutes of Bundesliga action this season. Not bad at all. So, Dortmund top the league. At the bottom, their arch-rival Schalke ended their pointless start with a 1-0 win over Mainz. Coach Domenico Tedesco had a bit of an embarrassing moment in his post-match press conference. He tried to talk about Schalke making certain substitutions. Instead, he got his tongue twisted, saying the German word for pleasuring themselves. That wasn't the only bit of smut in the Bundesliga this weekend either. Leipzig, who round off the top six, won 2-1 at Hoffenheim with Yusuf Poulsen's winner, as he eloquently puts it himself, coming half off his thigh and half off his balls. Quick word on Hoffenheim, who are a bit knackered themselves ahead of facing City. They had 5 of 8 possible centre-backs out this weekend through injury ahead of what is the biggest game in their history. However, 31-year-old coach Julian Nagelsmann is not to be underestimated. His side have still created enough chances in each game this season to win. Worth watching how he tries to combat Pep Guardiola.
Thanks for that, Archie. Let's go to Paolo Bandini, doing the same thing, but about a different league. Paolo's choice is Italy.
A big weekend in Italy, and you'll be shocked, shocked to hear that Juventus came out of it looking even stronger than before atop Serie A. A 3-1 win over Napoli, runners-up last season, of course, and the team that was closest to them in the table, gives Juve a 6-point lead already at the top of the table, which is the biggest a club has ever had this early into a Serie A season. And even more ominous for the competition and the standings is the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo is finally starting to look integrated into that team. It was he who set up the first Juventus goal with some old-fashioned wing play, turning El Cid Hissai inside out before crossing for Mario Mandzukic. And he effectively created the next two as well, first with a shot that hit the post and came back for Mandzukic to tap in, and then with a glancing header from a corner, the Leonardo Bonucci slid in at the back post. So Napoli actually started the game really well, taking the lead off 10 minutes and really taking the game to Juventus in this fluid 4-4-2 of Carlo Ancelotti's, and it was something that the champions really struggled to get to grips with. But as Luigi Garlando put it in Gazzetta dello Sport, Talent is a rich club's caviar and tactics are the bread of the poor. There is just such a wide financial gulf at the moment at the top of Serie A that Juventus are going to be very hard to catch. They were so much quality already last season. When Ronaldo plays like this, it does start to feel a little bit unfair. But theirs was not the only big game of the weekend. Roma won the derby 3-1. A big result after their terrible start to the season and talk that Eusebio Di Francesco's job could have been at risk after the defeat to Bologna last weekend, which led to the team president James Pilotta describing himself as disgusted. So big result for him and for Roma. Milan beat Sassuolo 4-1 to end their recent result, their recent run of draws. And Krzysztof Piątek scored his 7th and then his 8th goals of the season already at Genoa. And you won't be surprised to hear that prompted stories, predictably, that Juventus will now try and sign him in January.
Thank you, Paolo. Tactics, the bread of the poor. Jonathan Wilson will be very sad to hear that news. Lars, you wanted to talk about Jovinho.
Well, I mean, if it seems that Jovinho is then the caviar of Parma, if you will, because he scored again. And how exciting is it to have Jovinho back in Europe and doing well? I just love the comments from the Parma coach after they beat Cagliari. I'm a bit late to this party, but he talked about, I am fortunate to have such a great player in the squad, and he arrived with remarkable humility. He understands exactly where we're coming from, and that amazed me. And it's just, Parma, of course, they've made their way back from the lower leagues after having been, you know, struck off, basically. But it's just very strange to hear the coach of a club that once had so many illustrious names talk about Jovinho as if he's this extraordinary messianic character who's gracing them with his presence.
When was the last time any of you ate caviar?
I don't think I've ever eaten.
Just before Christmas.
There we go, okay.
I mean, I ate fish eggs at the weekend.
Of course you did. I'm just out of a fish for breakfast. Picking one out of a river and squeezing it until the ex-command is swallowing them whole. I don't think I've had it either. It just doesn't appeal to me.
I would eat it. I just... There weren't jars of it knocking around Shea Glendening when I was growing up. And yeah, I'd happily try it if anyone wants to send some my way.
It sort of fits with Langdon's winter look as well. He doesn't eat in casual summer, but come winter, he's suave and all he eats is caviar. In France, Paris Saint-Germain won again 3-0 at Nice. Neymar getting 2. All 3 goals were tap-ins. It maintains PSG's 100% record. So it's only them and Juve still have one in the top 5 leagues. Marseille, the only losers in the top half. They lost. Yes, Lars?
Big mention of Lille, who are second, which is extraordinary since they had, Leeds are currently having the positive Marcelo Bielsa experience. Of course, Lille did not have a very positive Marcelo Bielsa experience. He fell out with the hierarchy pretty early on. And, I mean, it's one of those things they had to get rid of him, but they couldn't really afford to pay him off. And the club was nearly relegated for financial reasons, and they had to have a clear out this summer. Incredibly, they are now second.
What did he sit on when he was at Lille?
Not a
bucket.
I mean, he was in charge for so few games. I don't think he had the bucket. I'm not entirely sure. Please,
was it a cooler?
Was it an ice box?
Please correct me.
Cooler was at Marseille.
Please correct me, the internet, if I'm wrong in saying I don't think he had anything. But he didn't. He wasn't there for long enough, really, to develop these weird habits.
Yes, but it's only like day one. You get something to sit on, isn't it? please tell us. Wabi Kazri scored 2 for St Etienne. They beat Monaco 2-0. Monaco on a 7-match winless streak. Their only win of the season was on the opening day. They're third from bottom in the relegation playoff spot. Guingamp have won their first of the season. They won 1-0 away at Angers. Angers. Oh, anyway, do you know what? I was good at French at school.
I got an A star in GCSE,
but you know, it's all gone now.
I mean, if a cursory Google Images search is anything to go by, it seems he didn't have anything to sit on. There are a lot of photos of him here being hunched. So perhaps the catastrophe at Lille was mainly just because he couldn't sit.
I think they'd spent too much money on all these Brazilian players that he brought in and that didn't work out.
Anyway, weird news in Nantes. Currently in 19th, they told their manager Miguel Cardoso his service is no longer required. But they need him to take charge at fourth place, Lyon away. They managed to get a point thanks to a good hit from Boschilia. They missed a penalty. Who missed the penalty, Barry? I'd call him Nabil Fekir. You'd call him
Nabil Fekir.
Apparently, Vahid Halilhodžić is to take over imminently. His first job since being sacked by Japan in April, just 2 months before they started their World Cup campaign. In Robin van Persie news, I'm a big fan of his grey hair because it makes me feel sort of happier about my own. He scored a brilliant free kick with 3 minutes to go and then got a straight red for what was looked like quite a strong yellow card rather than a straight red. They beat Vitesse Arnhem 2-1. And that's pretty much it. There was a great own goal in the Pauk game, Lars, but I don't have the details. I did mention it in a break. I don't know if anyone has the details.
I was saying I have the details would be going too far.
Okay.
I'll just say it's out there. It's worth finding.
It's an own goal. It reminds me of Wayne Hatswell in the FA Cup. It's where a defender is quite close to his own goal, has time to steady himself, and then ram it home.
Well, I mean... Yeah, and then falls over immediately, whether it's just because he's out of balance or he's just disgusted with what just happened.
Well, I'll make a promise. We'll show it at the live show on a big screen on the 29th of November at the Emmanuel Centre. Me, you, Barry Wilson, and someone else who can be bothered to turn up. Come and watch us, if nothing else, to see that Pauk own goal. It wasn't even Pauk, was it? They won.
Yeah, so it was against Pauk.
Whoever they were playing. Producer Jonathan's away, and you know, so it's like producer Sammy, it's like having the supply teacher in. We don't need details, do we? Joseph asks, is there any of you playing fantasy football? If so, what are your team names, including producer Jonathan? This, I presume, is winning the Guardian League. I'm having a modest start to the season with the steamed Fulhams, a classic Simpson reference. I can't bear fantasy football, and it was a trouble because I used to host a TV show called Fantasy Football, which was largely about fantasy football, and I had to pretend to be interested about who you should get in your team this week because they might get an assist.
I haven't bothered with it this season. My team used to be, I belong to Jimbo, which for reasons I won't elaborate on, last season was changed to Et Tu, Jimbo.
My team, the Hot Breakfasts, have had an indifferent start to the season. We're in a rank overall is the 204,000th, which, I mean, out of 5.6 million is not terrible, but yeah, it's been a bit
hit. Pretty good, I guess. Mark,
I've gone for When Harry Met Ali is my team name. The team name's doing better than the team this season.
How many points?
No, I've almost given up.
This is early stage of the season to give up, Langdon.
Well, you see, the last time I played, I had Asamoah Gyan, and he'd already moved to Saudi Arabia. So I'm in a predictions league, a Premier League predictions league, and I'm in 30th place of 1,500 people, which is a season too late for the Premier League predictions TV show that I've also been removed from. Mrs. T says, I just saw Max and Barry on the Premier League show. We were on it for about 20 seconds. Barry doesn't look anything like I imagined he was by the sound of his voice. Barry, I've seen it. Yeah, it looked, I mean, other pods did better. I think we need to sit up straight in the next time we do a TV. Everyone else was slightly better dressed.
But one said there would be cameras. I was not informed.
Would you have worn a tuxedo?
Oh, actually, it was maybe very lineup.
It was. Yeah.
I mean, you're dressed, and
it was a week too early for the Langdon. thought they might be coming back again.
We'd have got more airtime with Autumn Langdon.
I might have worn a shirt. That's what I'm saying.
On the subject of Gary Flitcroft's infinity pool, Ian the pool guy says, today I listened to the pod while cleaning the pool at Gary Flitcroft's other villa overlooking Coral Bay. He seriously has two. They are both for sale if you're interested. So the two of us could go and live in Gary Flitcroft's houses in Cyprus if we're interested. And Mr. Marco says, at the start of 2018, you mentioned counting the amount of pizzas Barry would consume in 2018. So where are we? Now, I confess I've not fulfilled my part of the bargain. You were at naught the last time I checked, Barry, which I think must have been around April or May. Can you remember?
I would say two.
Okay. Everybody remember? Because if somebody listening, if you could be in charge of keeping count of Barry's pizza eating, you'll get a credit at the end of the year. I don't know what that means.
I would also point out that at two different live shows, pizza was available in the green room because no one appears to care about my dietary requirements.
No.
It's
as if the people organising these things don't listen to the pod.
Yeah, and I didn't participate in either.
Interesting.
Can I just say that after the last live show, the pizza arrived, I went to the bathroom, I hadn't had any pizza yet. When I came back, Max was sort of giving away pizza to random members of the public, and in the end there weren't actually that many pizzas left, and I went to bed quite hungry.
Oh, that was in the bar. I got my credit card bill from that bar.
Oh,
hello, because I was thinking, because I bought lunch, didn't I? And I haven't
Yeah, I got my credit card, but it says this is Oslo Sports Bar, which was surprisingly packed. Well, I suppose not surprising because there were Champions League games on.
Man United.
But there was no one at the bar, which I immediately thought, ooh, this is a bad sign. No one's buying drink. So everyone is a bit slow to put their hands in their pockets. So I went, right, who wants a pint? So I ordered 5 pints, got my credit card bill the other day or saw it online. £44 for 5 pints of lager.
Well, Barry, what I would like to say is thank you for buying that. Right, I'm off to get my ears syringed. Seriously.
Is that a euphemism?
No, I genuinely am going to get my ears syringed. And
it's costing you £80.
It is, yeah.
I have volunteered to do it for free. I know how to syringe dog ears.
And then you can buy two rounds in a bar and
imagine yours are not that different.
But you see, my ears don't. Look at my ears. They're not. They don't like flop down like a dachshund.
The inside of your ears
is similar to a dog's.
I would imagine so. I'm only guessing.
How many dog's ears have you syringed?
Well, I've certainly syringed one dog's ears about 10 or 15 times.
Okay.
And I would say...
Whose dog is that?
Ours. Oh, okay. Now deceased.
Oh, okay. Did it die from perforated eardrums?
No. It's really easy.
I mean, listen, I really appreciate the offer, okay?
I'm offering to do it for free. You're paying £80 to somebody who sounded very humorless when you were pointing out, now, A, that you wanted your ear syringe, and B, that you currently without a mobile phone.
And
can't be contacted, even though you wouldn't be able to hear it because your ears are blocked.
This podcast requires people to be humorful. Right? To have sense of humour. I don't care how straight-laced the ear syringer is, right? I'm not going there to be entertained. I'm going there so I can hear this afternoon.
Did she sound like she was just fed up of chancers calling up, booking appointments, and then not turning up since you don't have a phone and you just don't sound like a credible person?
I don't know, but it doesn't mean anything to anyone else. But if you, and I'm sure most people listening at some point have had a blocked ear, it's all-encompassing. You know, it's taken every last sinew of strength for me to do this podcast, and I don't believe I'm getting the credit I deserve right now from the three of you. Thanks for your time, Mark.
Good luck, Max.
Cheers, Lars.
Good luck.
Thanks, Baz.
Thank you.
And we'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.